You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hey, ELT. My name is Chris, calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. First time caller, long time listener. Listen, I had a question. We get a lot of cool pictures online from space. I wanted to know, are those photos real? Thanks.
Hello?
Beam me what's up, Chris. It's Flora from ELT.
Hi, Flora. How's it going?
Chris, from zero to blast off, what level of space enthusiast are you?
Blast off. Very blast off. I started as a kid going to the local library, pretty much reading any book that LeVar Burton made a suggestion on reading Rainbow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he had a thing for space, so naturally, I just picked up on that, and it just stuck. And then, of course, once I got older, and I'm an 80s baby, so actually watching Alien, the movie, that just kind of cemented all of that into my brain, so I'm a space nut.
I love that Alien did it for you, because I think for me, I never wanted to think about outer space again after seeing Alien.
No, LeVar Burton walked me to the door, but Alien definitely asked me to have a seat and then move in.
What about Star Trek? Are you a Trekkie?
No, only because they do the warp speed thing, and I hate warp speed, because every 5 seconds, there's a spaceship zooming into space, and it just bothers me that the first thing they do in space is just to get to the next part of space as quickly as possible. And I'm like, going into space, you really want to just be going fast, limitlessly, unlimited speed? I want to see everything.
You're like, take it in.
Take it in.
Enjoy the journey.
Yes. What planets did you see? What strange sights did you see before you met the green people and, you know, colonized their planet? You know, like, what did you see?
Okay, so you called about space images. Are you talking about the colorful NASA pics that show up in news articles and, like, on desktop backgrounds?
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
Yes, I do. It is... let me make sure I get this right. It is the Pillars of Creation.
Oh, I know that one. Let me see if I can describe it. There are three golden glowing columns in outer space on this sort of like aquamarine-y background.
Yeah, like dust columns, and you can see through them. Wow. Oh my God. I love that image. The first time I saw it, it blew my mind because it was on Twitter, and I'm going down the timeline, and I see this image, and I'm like, what? It's beautiful and frightening, and also, like, you don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to know, like, are those colors actual colors, or is it scientific guessing, or Photoshop, or are they trying to be as realistic as possible?
Right. So, Pillars of Creation, but all these, like, Technicolor images of space, are they real?
Yeah. I just would like to know, like, what's the science behind those images? If there's any science, or if it's just movie magic, it's something that keeps us interested in space, I'm with that too.
Either way is good.
I do not judge. Whatever you have to do to keep me entertained, I would definitely stay entertained. I love it.
Chris, I think we have just the person to complete the picture.
Hi, Chris. I'm Joe DePasquale. I make pictures of space for a living.
Joe's a big picture guy for NASA. He works on the images you called about.
Wow. That's like the coolest job.
It turns out that you and Joe have similar taste in interstellar artwork. He is also a big Pillars fan.
Oh, I love that image. It just has this like beautiful color palette to it. You know, lots of blues and oranges, warms and cools contrasting with each other. But also, it's like these giant clouds, the multi-light-year long clouds.
What?
Yeah, it would take light years to get from one end of the pillar to the other.
I think the tallest one is like 4 light-years tall. So it's just like this immense structure.
4 light-years? Wow.
We'd be a speck of a speck next to one of these pillars.
A speck, yeah. See, it's so cool, yo. It's so cool.
Okay, so let's get to your questions. Mm-hmm. You wanted to know whether these stellar snaps are real photographs or images that an artist whipped up based on our observations of space.
Yeah. How much is fact versus creative license?
So that question comes up all the time. And spoiler, yes, they are real.
Let's unpack it. So how real?
That's exactly the right question. They are real photographs, but like every glamour shot, they have been touched up a little. Cosmic wrinkles smoothed, flabby galaxies toned. And they're not an exact reproduction of what your eye would see. Like if you were zipping past one of these space attractions, it wouldn't necessarily look like the picture because your eyes can't hold a lit candle to a NASA space telescope.
Got it.
So here's how these galactic glossies get made. The pictures are taken by the Hubble Space Telescope. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, Hubble has been around for a long time. So yeah, I've heard of it.
So it's a school bus-sized looking glass 340 miles above Earth with a dash cam that is out of this world.
The intensity of the light that we see from Hubble is far beyond what our eyes are sensitive to.
Hubble can see all the light that our eyes can see, plus some infrared and ultraviolet. And it can capture very, very faint light at levels our eyes would never see.
Hubble will sit on an object and look at it for, you know, many, many seconds and create a long exposure. And it has, you know, the ability to maintain focus on one specific spot very precisely so it doesn't blur the image.
So it's like any long exposure shot.
Mm-hmm.
You put your camera on a tripod, leave the shutter open for 10 seconds, and you'll capture a lot more light than you would with a quick snapshot.
Okay.
So basically, stars that look really faint to the naked eye would be blazing in a Hubble photo. And thanks to these long exposures, Hubble has seen hundreds of galaxies in dark corners of the sky that we thought were empty space.
Wow. Hubble is the mutant with the best eyes in the world. I guess with his job, how does he interpret how we would see it?
So this gets to the color part.
Okay.
Hubble trains its camera on one spot and then takes multiple shots of one color at a time. So it takes a picture of all the red light in an area, then all the blue light, then the green. And the reason they do this is because the colors tell us something about what we're looking at.
Got it.
Specific elements have a color signature. Oxygen can show up as a specific shade of green. Sulfur can look red, which means that each color-coded picture can tell us something about what that space stuff is made out of.
Yeah, so the colors do correlate into something scientific that's actually happening. That's cool.
Yeah, but Joe also has some creative license. So what he does is he takes those color photos and he layers them up. And sometimes he has to adjust the color to show more detail. Sometimes he has to assign invisible light, like ultraviolet or infrared light, a color. And this is where Joe starts to make some choices.
It becomes much more about aesthetics and composition and tonality. And, you know, I really start to think about it as a photographer, more so than a scientist.
It's also where the fun begins.
Since I've been working from home, I'll put on the mood lights and then just sort of disappear into an image for a while.
Like lava lamps?
I do have a lava lamp. I've had it since high school. And then I have this other little lamp that is, it's like a nebula projector. So it's got like this like sort of frosted glass thing that rotates and makes shapes on the ceiling around me.
It's like one of those things that kids get?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure I'm picturing the right thing.
So I guess his decorating style would go perfectly with mine as far as me wanting an aurora borealis going off in my kitchen.
Yeah, I think you two are two peas in a pod. You could definitely be roommates.
Yeah. And believe me, I've had some roommates that are not interested in my lighting scheme. So yeah, he would definitely be a pleasure to get to know.
Joe's artistic process also requires mood music.
I really like putting on Boards of Canada and zoning out.
Let me play you a little ditty from the Boards of Canada catalog. I feel like I'm in outer space.
Exactly. I don't want to date the guy, but it sounds like we grew up in the same time period, because I definitely heard Stranger Things, the 80s vibe. Yeah, I get it.
I can get lost like that for hours, especially when I get to the point of like needing to clean up cosmic rays and stuff that's like really minute details in the image.
God, I hate when cosmic rays get in my photos.
I was just having a discussion with someone the other day about the cosmic rays in my photos. I'm glad I'm not the only person that's suffering with this.
Oh, yeah. They're the worst. They ruin everything.
So that's another thing Joe does. He goes to a lot of hubble, toil and trouble to clean these images up. And cosmic rays aren't his only concern. He told us he also has to deal with photo bombers.
I'm hoping it's aliens actually doing the fumble bombing.
I'm not at liberty to discuss what it is exactly, but
it's asteroids.
Asteroids, yeah, I guess they seem to be the bad guys of space too.
So besides airbrushing out those paint in the asteroids, Joe wants to make sure that these images are as accurate as possible.
It's almost like journalist photography. So I don't add things that weren't already there. I don't remove things unless it's like clearly an artifact caused by the telescope system.
Yeah, you're not putting like googly eyes on the Crab Nebula.
That would be a lot of fun, but yeah, I can't do that.
These images are seen by people all over the world. Does it feel like a big responsibility to work on these photos?
Yeah, it does. I remember working on an anniversary image from the Lagoon Nebula.
I'm going to send you a picture of it, Chris, and we'll put it on Instagram at ELT Show.
When I was putting that image together and finally seeing what it might look like in the final version, I remember thinking, wow, I'm the first person seeing this. Like, it's coming together on my screen in real time, and no one else has seen it like this yet.
Look at the stars. Man, it's gorgeous. Oh, man. And this is his work? And I've seen this before.
Yeah, that's his work.
It's almost reminiscent of the gods touching hands.
Like the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah, where their fingers are stretched out to each other. It's almost reminiscent of that. It's beautiful. I like the idea of someone like Joe existing in the world, making sure that space is getting shown in its best light.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Joe. Well, if he's looking for an intern, he has a guy in Charlotte that I definitely know. Well, I'll definitely consider it.
So let's take a minute to zoom out and get the 20 million foot view. Mm-hmm. Images like the one Joe makes are more than glittering glamour shots. They changed how we think about space. Before Hubble, we imagined the universe as kind of empty, and that's how it looked in big sci-fi TV shows like Star Trek.
When you think about the original Star Trek, pretty much everything was black.
That's NASA astronomer Michelle Thaler.
Hi.
And she's here to give us the big picture on these pictures.
I mean, so there were planets, and okay, you could see the planets, they're orbiting planets of various colors, but space itself was empty.
Space was a big black canvas. But as Hubble started to beam images back to Earth, Star Trek updated its look.
All of a sudden, space was a dynamic place, full of color, full of drama, full of change. You know, the space between the stars is in fact full of material. And I think that tracks very well with the launch of Hubble and the development of Hubble images.
Man, that's so cool.
But Hubble didn't just change the green screen behind the Starship Enterprise. It also made us reconsider our place in the universe. Before Hubble launched, we really only knew about our nearest neighbors. We didn't know of any planets outside of our own little solar system.
What?
It was in the mid-90s that the very first exoplanets were found, and we forget that.
I was like in high school, you know?
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I was in high school. I said the exact same thing. And that's when we first found our first planet?
Outside of our solar system, yeah.
Why does that just sound so unbelievable?
I know. I felt the exact same way. I was like, what? Because now we know, of course, there are so many exoplanets.
Yeah.
But that's really recent, and it's thanks to Hubble.
Yeah. Wow, Hubble has been that girl for the longest time, and I have not paid any attention to her, and I'm upset.
Well, brace yourself, Chris. There's a new space telescope in town, and Michelle says it is going to blow our little earthly minds.
It literally is like we've been blind and now we're opening new eyes. We've never had eyes like this up in space.
That's after the break. On Christmas Day last year, from a coastal launch site in French Guiana, a rocket blasted off for outer space.
Décollage.
Décollage, liftoff from a tropical rainforest to the edge of time itself, a voyage back to the birth of the universe.
It was carrying a brand new space telescope.
The James Webb Space Telescope. As far as light gathering capability, it's about 100 times better than Hubble. And so the more light you can gather, of course, the fainter objects you can see. And the thing that really makes Webb special in what it can see is, in this case, unlike Hubble, it sees infrared light.
So infrared light has this very long wavelength, and we can't see it. We feel it as heat. Hubble could see a little bit of infrared, but James Webb is designed specifically to capture this kind of light. And here are the advantages. Infrared lets you see things farther away than visible light does, so Webb will peer deeper into space than any telescope before it. And infrared makes a bunch of stuff that's invisible visible.
And so all of this material that we talked about, the stuff between the stars, the gas in nebulas, the dust of our galaxy, planets that are, you know, tiny and far away, all of these things actually give off far more energy in infrared. Space really does become full of material when you look in the infrared.
Of course, space looks better infrared. The Predator wasn't walking around with those glasses for nothing. Of course, space looks better in infrared.
Another movie reference I can completely relate to. Okay, which brings us back to the planet hunt. Hubble introduced us to thousands of new-to-us planets.
But we don't know anything about the conditions there. Do they have an Earth-like atmosphere? Or is the atmosphere more like the planet Mars or Venus? Is there a possibility that there is a life-friendly environment? So in the first year or so after Webb launches, you know, I'm really hoping for measurements of the atmospheres of exoplanets. And for the first time, we'll be able to point up in the sky and say, that star has a planet with an atmosphere very much like the Earth. There's oxygen, there's water vapor, there's carbon dioxide, methane. There's a decent chance that there's life on that planet.
Wow.
And infrared tells us all this? Infrared can tell us the composition of an atmosphere?
Yeah, it's really, really good at it. So most of the things that are life markers, like you have strong presence of water vapor, strong presence of oxygen, ozone, you know, carbon dioxide and methane, infrared is a great, great, great place to look for these signals. They come through strong.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see what James Webb brings us back.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited. Michelle thinks Webb will help us find life-friendly planets all over the universe. So fasten your Kuiper belt and get ready for impact, because
we're still in pure discovery mode.
You know, I think for lay people, it was really clear when a human being put that boot down on the moon, we understood that that was a historic moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Walking somewhere other than the Earth. That was amazing.
Like, that's huge, right? It's just very powerful and visceral, and I think anyone can get that. But I wonder if for you and for astronomers, if James Webb has some of that quality, like when it unfurled, if in your world it brings that same kind of level of this is a historic, excuse my language, moment, you know?
I have so much trouble cleaning up my language. I'm so glad you said because I do all the time.
Oh, please. You're feel free on this podcast.
Wow. Okay. All right. The universe is f-ing amazing. I want a series called Scientists That Swear because people have no idea. It's like, do you know how f-ing huge Jupiter is? Do you know you could fit 1,000 Earths? All right. But anyway, we're waiting. We are just waiting with bated breath at what this thing's going to see. It's like, it literally is like we've been blind and now we're opening new eyes. We've never had eyes like this up in space. Everywhere we look, everything we see is going to be a new view of it. And we're going to see things we never have before, farther than we had before. And, you know, it's up there now. We're drawing the curtain back. And it's like, what are we going to see? Yeah, it really is goosebump time.
Wow. It gives you goosebumps because maybe we peel back the curtain and we see something that's looking at us. I'm excited. I want to see. I want to see what's out there.
They're just starting to take pictures now. And they're going to go to Joe. He'll be the one who works on them.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, man, Joe's star, his star is rising, man, because he's gonna do some beautiful things with those images. I can't wait to see what Joe does with those web captures. Like my future, for as long as I got left on Earth, my future of being a space nut is only gonna get better and more colorful, and I'm excited. I'm excited. And this time I'll pay a lot more attention to the Webb satellite than I did Hubble, poor thing.
If you have a burning question you can't find an answer to, give us a ring. 833 Ring ELT. 833 Ring ELT.
This episode was produced by Jahi Whitehead, Adley Robinson, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Doug Barron. Our fact checker is Nicole Basulka. Our editors are Jorge Just and Caitlin Kenny. Music by Dara Hirsch, Bobby Lord, So Wiley, Boards of Canada, and Emma Munger. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. Every Little Thing is a Gimlet production and a Spotify original podcast. Live, laugh, and prosper. Goodbye.